Amen. Could I, preacher? And also a sermon, if you could. If you have, I could use a message. Amen. Amen. Well, amen. Amen. Well, would be saved? Okay, both of you are happy about that. Good be in church. Okay, I'm not asking nothing else. I'm not asking nothing else. All right. I'll mention a couple things about the book table. Yeah, Kathy's going to be, when are you going to pick it up? Before service tomorrow night, Gipper? After? Okay, so the table will be up before the service tomorrow night. But afterwards, it won't. She's going to be picking it up. Because she's wrote all these. She already knows what the sermons are all about. So. But anyway, so yeah, if you want anything, she'll be out there. This one, called Fight On. No, it's not about a Baptist business meeting, okay? Probably a good book for a Baptist business meeting. Hardcover, pointed corner, stop a small caliber round. But, guys, I really mean this. You know, I come from a generation, your pastor, same thing. I come from a generation when I was a kid, our nation exalted heroes. And every kid in my generation wanted to be a hero. Thank you very much, brother. We all want to be heroes. You may not know who you got preaching for you, but you're looking at the guy that I sank every German and Japanese ship that was left over from World War II when I was only 9 years old. You say, how'd you do that? They were in a creek out in back of my house and only needed rocks. And I did it while I built a hydroelectric plant and fought Indians, because back then you were allowed to fight Indians. But anyway, and really, you know, like I always say, you know, if you took our shirt off, our T-shirt was a blue one with a big red S on it, okay? Because that's, we all want to be heroes. Tell me if this isn't true. Now the nation exalts victims. You can meet a stranger and they will tell you about their surgery. We were at a restaurant one time and you know, I was telling you about waitresses, and I told this waitress, I said, your service is very good. She goes, well, I'm very glad. She, a month ago, I didn't know I'd be able to do this. And pulled out a color, like, I don't know what it was, not an X-ray, of her brain. She had something wrong with her brain. She really did, too. But anyway, I mean, you know, I just ordered my food, and she showed me. I said, cancel the spaghetti. But anyway, but I mean, I'm serious. Everybody wants to tell you how tough life's been on them. And so everybody wants to be a victim. And I just tell people, I said, if you just want somebody to kind of sit across from you, hold your hand, have a little compassion for your life's trials. I'm not your guy. Okay? You say you don't care? Not even a little. No, I don't. I don't care. Don't you worry. I'm not going to tell you about mine, because I hope you don't care about mine. But if you want to keep going for God, I will do everything I can to keep you going for God. I really will. And that's what this is about. These are not survival stories. Most of them are just one page. They cover any war from the Napoleonic Wars to the present-day Gulf Wars, but they also cover shipwrecks, plane wrecks, volcanoes, hurricanes, train wrecks, grizzly bear attacks. Ooh, on the order of violence, grizzly bear attacks rank just below a Baptist business meeting. And I'll give you an example. Here's the first story. It was in November 1944. They'd stationed a Sherman tank at a crossroads all night to kind of keep the Germans from trying to infiltrate some troops. Well, the Germans didn't infiltrate. They had a full-blown attack. And they hit that tank, and they knocked it out and it killed everybody in that tank but one guy. Now, when that happens, it's kind of time for that guy to go, ooh, I'll go for help. But instead, he loaded the main gun, the 76-millimeter gun, and held the Germans off as he aimed it and fired it until he ran out of ammunition. And if you're familiar with the tank, coaxial with the main gun was 30 caliber machine gun. So when he had no more main gun ammunition, he got behind the 30 cal, and he swept the field with a grazing fire, holding the Germans back till he ran out of ammunition. But up on top of the turret was a 50 cal, so he popped the hatch, and he started blazing away with that till he ran out of ammunition. But he had a Thompson submachine gun, so he drove them back until that was out of ammunition. Now all he had was his Colt 1911 and seven more opportunities to kind of reach out and touch someone. And by the time he was out of ammunition, the Germans are on top of him. So he buttons it up, And they're climbing all over this tank trying to figure out some way to kill him. And lo and behold, he found a box of hand grenades. And he donated those to the German army that night. And when they came back the next morning, there was that tank. He was fine. He was in that tank amongst a sea of dead enemy soldiers. Say, what happened? He chose to fight on. I don't believe. Now look, survival is where you just wash up on the shore by luck and John Calvin. Fight on is when you don't want to go any farther and you say, I'm going to keep on going. Yep. And so we have this one. We have another one. There's a paperback version of this one. But my wife, if you buy them both, my wife gives some kind of a deal. I think they're $25 a piece. But if you buy them both, they're $60. Yeah, we're hoping you went to public school. This one, It's Thy Kingdom Come, The Promise of the King. You guys know what a historical novel is. It's historic facts in a novel format. This is biblical facts in that format. And this is there's also two volumes of this. This is the first one. There's a second one back there. And the value of that book is, here's what I've gotten from parents. It said, it's gotten our teenager interested in the Bible. Our teenager wasn't listening to preaching much or anything like that. And they said, they read this and it just got them interested. So that, you know, like you got a nephew or something, that may be a gift. Guys, I don't know how many books I've written on a King James Bible, and I'm working on about three more right now. But this book here is called Your Purpose for Existing. This is not about the King James Bible. And I consider this the most important book I've ever written. And it tells you why you're here. And I told you last night, it's Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they are and were created. That is the sole purpose of us being on this earth, is to put a smile on our face, on the face of our Creator. Guys, I don't know how you count success, but if you can pillow your head at night and say, I think I made him smile today, you have been successful. So that book is back there. I think this is one of those books, we only have about one left, so a first person can pay for it and take it home tomorrow, but anybody else pay for it, we'll ship it to you. And then this is the big one. I can tell you right now, I'll never do another one of these. Now, I'm kind of like your church. I'm working with a new sound system. And I used to do 24-hour seminar. We would go 2 days, Thursday and Friday. We'd go from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night on Thursday, 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, in the evening on Friday, 12 hours, 2 days. And in that 24 hours, it's literally a one-year college curriculum, 32 separate lessons on defending your King James Bible. Some of the stuff that's covered here are the two lines of Greek manuscripts. I told you, one from Antioch, one from Alexandria. The establishment of the canon. Who said these 27 books are legitimate for the New Testament and these aren't? And it's in here. The theories of inspiration, the hexapla, the apocrypha, reasoned eclecticism. Now, doesn't that sound like something you go to the doctor for? But when you hear the word reason, don't you think, oh, something's going to be reasonable? Nothing can be further from the truth. I call this scholarship on drugs, okay? Let me tell you how it used to be. It used to be, you know, like somebody's got an NIV and there's a verse missing. And you say, well, see, there's a verse missing. And they go, well, that's because this is based on the Alexandrian Greek manuscripts, and we think those are the best. You think the Antiochian are, but we don't. So even if they had a bad Bible, it was based on a Greek manuscript. No matter how faulty, it was a Greek manuscript. I read the scholars. Here's what they say now. We put in what we think should be there and hope someday they will discover a manuscript that documents our conjecture. People, that's not authority, okay? So here's Desiderius Erasmus. That's two names never to give you children. But there's 32 lessons here. There's I think there's 12 DVDs that cover the 32 lessons. And then there's two CDs. One CD is the entire audio on MP3, so you can listen to it while you're driving. And the other CD, there's a 130-page syllabus, 8.5 by 11 pages, 130 pages, that goes with this. And so that is back there. And that is, that's what I teach my students when I teach Bible history and manuscript evidence. So those are back there. And I told you my wife will take your money. Man, We've been married almost 49 years. I can testify that woman knows how to take money. You have no idea what a blessing it is to me if you're taking somebody else's money. All right, I want you to open your Bibles to 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Now, guys, I want to be your friend, but I am going to contend with you about something. Now, I don't know who I'm contending with, and I'm not trying to, you know, nail anybody down or pick them out or anything like that. But here's what I mean. All right, I am not one of those guys. There are some preachers that will try to get saved people thinking that they're lost. And I think there are some folks that say they're saved and think they are and they're not, or know they're not and they say they are. But if I ask you tonight, are you saved, and you put your hand up, I am not going to go, I don't believe you. I'm gonna accept it. This gets said a lot in our churches. How many of you love the Lord? You know, I've never heard anybody say, you love the Lord, and somebody out there in the pew going, let me see it. Nah. I mean, you got enough sense to put your hand up and lie, okay? And if I asked you tonight, do you love the Lord, and you put your hand up, I am not going to contend with you. I'm not going to try to prove to you that you don't really love the Lord, or if you say you're saved, you're not really saved. But there is something that sometimes is mentioned in our churches, and everybody jumps on board just like, I love the Lord and I'm saved, and I have a problem with it, okay? I want you to look here at 2 Timothy chapter 2. And in 2 Timothy chapter 2, look at verse 1. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things which thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangle himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. If a man also strive for masteries, yet he is not crowned, except he strive lawfully. Let's bow our heads and let's talk to the author of these words. Father, we thank you for you. We really do, God. I think I speak for these people tonight, God. If I say this, we have no complaint with you, because there's nothing wrong with you. We have no complaint against this book, because there's nothing wrong with this book. God, if there's a problem here, it's me, or it's these individuals. The greatest problem I face, God, is Sam Gipp. And Lord, the greatest problem these folks have right now is Sam Gipp, because I'm the one that could keep them from hearing from you. So please, God, get Sam Gipp out of their way and out of your way. And please speak to the hearts of your people, God, and accomplish your purpose. And each life represented in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen. Verse 3, where it says, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Now, I'm not asking anybody to raise their hand. But if I say, are you saved, raise your hand, you raise your hand, I'm not going to argue. And if I say, do you love the Lord, raise your hand, you raise your hand, I'm not going to contend with you. But too often we go, now how many of you are soldiers for Christ? Boy, just as many hands go up as there are people in the world. That's what I have a problem with. Now to explain this, I have to give you just a little excerpt from 4 years of my life, the year 16, 17, 18, and 19. They were all connected in one way or another. Now, I was raised Roman Catholic. I started running my life about the time I was 12 years old. I started running the streets. Stole my first car when I was 14 years old. Got arrested my first time when I was 14 years old. Spent my first night in jail when I was 14 years old. When I was 16 years old, four friends of mine and I, five of us, went to the local Mercury dealer, and we hotwired two brand-new 1966 Comet 394 speed, 335 horsepower Comet GTs. And we took those cars out and literally flogged them to death, left them smoking alongside the road. And I always tell young people, because young people need to know this, the only dumb cops are on TV. It's amazing when somebody will say, man, I did this, I didn't even get caught. Do you know how stupid you got to be to get caught committing a crime? They don't catch you committing a crime. You don't get caught that night, but in about 2 weeks, they're knocking on your door because they're not stupid, okay? And about 2 weeks later, man, black and white pulled up in front of my house. I was arrested for two cases of grand theft auto. And when I was 16 years old, I was sentenced to 6 months in the Mansfield Reformatory. Now, the Mansfield Reformatory was a very ominous place. I had a very bad reputation, and you may have seen it. Oh, no, I've never seen it. Oh, you never know. You never know. See, there's a movie out there called The Shawshank Redemption. And in the opening scene of this movie, they show this very ominous-looking prison. That is the Mansfield Reformatory. So I got sentenced when I was 16 years old to 6 months in Mansfield Reformatory. But the judge said this, but I am going to make it 2 years probation. But any time in the next 2 years you violate your probation, you're doing 6 months in Mansfield. So I'm kind of walking a tightrope. Now, guys, you say, ooh, I bet that made you walk circumspectly. Didn't change a thing. I got just as drunk, stole cars just as bad, did everything I was always doing. And my probation officer knew it. He just couldn't catch me. And I'll never forget, I was reporting to him one day, and he said this. He knew. We both knew I was not being good. And he said, Gip, he said, I am going to catch you jaywalking, and you're going to Mansfield. That kind of got my attention. That's when I was 16. When I was 17, one night about 3 o'clock in the morning, me and my best friend were out in my car, drunk, and we're out on the country road, and the road made a sharp left, and we made most of a left, but not all of a left. And I put my car in a ditch. Now, I didn't say I put my car in a ditch. You know what you put in a ditch? You put a tire in a ditch. You know what you put in a ditch? The whole car. How about 1957 Chevy Bel Air? And this thing was such a ditch that literally the top was below the road level. When they totaled the car, the only thing that was still straight on it was the roof and the trunk. Everything else was destroyed. So here I am. It's not legal to drink in Ohio until you're 18. So I'm drunk. I'm illegal. And I'm on probation, and I'm looking at 6 months in Mansfield. And so this trooper came out, Ohio State trooper came out. And I still remember I'm sitting in the car next to him. And he says, how old are you, Sam? I said, 17. He said, you know it's illegal to drink below the age of 18 in the state of Ohio? I said, yes, sir, I do. He said, you've been drinking tonight? I said, no, sir. And so we're talking a while, and then he says, how old are you, Sam? I thought, man, to see Alzheimer's right next to you that fast. And I said, 17. He said, do you know that it's illegal in the state of Ohio to drink under the age of 18? I said, yes, sir. He said, you've been drinking tonight? I said, no, sir. And he just blew up. And he looked at me and he said, well, one of us has, it ain't been me. And I looked honest, I looked over him and I said, well, it must have been because it ain't been me. And I don't know if it was the audacity or what, but he didn't arrest me. And so he said, what happened? I said, well, I passed out while I was driving. Well, I did. I was kind of drunk. Anyway, Now I want to explain something to you. I can't hit my head, okay? It's just not a good thing to do. But if you hit your forehead like this and get a brainwave anytime in the next 2 months, your brainwaves will come back scattered. You're like you're a Democrat. And this doctor, who years later was saying that guy that overlooked my broken neck, day after this, I put this car in a ditch, he does a brainwave. So we come back all scrambled. And he said, you're a petite mal epileptic. And I thought, I'll be anything you want me to be as long as I'm not an inmate at Mansfield Reformatory. So in when I was 17, I was declared a petite mal epileptic. When I was 18, that's 1968, that was the first year that they got away from the draft. And what they did for maybe 1 or 2 years, they had what they called the lottery. And they took every eligible guy, and they started with January, went to December. And the first 4 months, if you were born anytime in the first 4 months, you may as well enlist because you're gone. If you're born in the second 4 months, you're probably gone. And if you're born the third 4 months, go get a day job, no problem, you're not going to go. And I'm in that second group, and I'm going. So I know I'm going to get drafted. And that was Vietnam War, was at its height. And I was waiting to get drafted. I figured I'd get out of high school and go to Vietnam. And I never got drafted. So when I was 19, I walked into the Marine recruiter. And this is exactly what I said. I walked up to this recruiter, and I said, I want to join the Marines. I want to go to Vietnam. I want to kill people. Now, you'd think that would make a Marine recruiter happy. It did. He was happy. And so he's going to sign me up to be a Marine. And that's all I want to do. I just want to go to Vietnam, and I want to kill people. And he's getting his form ready, and he's got my draft card in his hand. Now, you guys know that 1A is eligible and 4F. And I wasn't 4F, but I wasn't 1A. And all of a sudden he goes, oh, he said, I can't recruit you. I said, why not? He said, well, you're classified 1Y. I said, what's 1Y? He said, you can only join the military if it's a declared war or a national emergency. He said, Vietnam is not a declared war, and it's not a national emergency. He said, I can't have you join. So when I was 19 years old, I tried to get into the Marine Corps. And I was not allowed to get in the Marine Corps. You know what that means to guys that went into the Marine Corps? Nothing. You think I go to a Marine? I don't know if there's somebody here who was a Marine Corps. But could you imagine if you were in the Marine Corps and I come up and go, I almost joined. To which he'd say, so what? Guys, here's what I'm telling you. I tried to join the Marines. I tried to join the U.S. military. I never got to. That means I was never any kind of a soldier or a Marine for this country. And I never tried to get what they call stolen valor. They get these guys, you know, that stand out there with, you know, we'll work for food. There was one of these guys, he'd stand on a street corner, his army uniform with his medals on, his outfit on his patch on his shoulder. And a guy walked up to him and said, you're in the army, huh? Yeah. Such company, huh? Yeah. He said, so was I. He said, how come you got your company patch on the wrong shoulder? And he said, how come you got your medals in the wrong order? And that guy started walking, and this guy's hounding him. He says, you get that uniform on, off, and don't you ever put it on again. Guys, what I'm saying is this. I don't ever walk around saying, I tried to join the Marines, because that doesn't mean nothing. I was a youth director in a church, about 2,000 people. And somebody bought me a letter opener. It was the coolest letter opener I ever saw. It was a miniature M1 bayonet. I really liked that letter opener. I got rid of it. You know why I got rid of it? Because before they gave it to me, when they gave it to me, they said this. They said, you put me in mind of a Marine. So I had the blade engraved U.S. Marine Corps, United States Marine Corps. I was never in that state. And every time I'd look at that bayonet, I'd think, that letter open, I'd think, I got no business having this. And I had a pastor friend, and he was in the Marines. I took that thing down to him. I gave it to him. I said, preacher, you were in the Marine Corps. You should have this. I got no business having it. That book, Fight On, and the second one, the introduction was written by a guy that was a lieutenant colonel in the Army in Special Forces. He was a Green Beret. And believe it or not, he saved, and he liked me. He's in heaven now, so he probably doesn't like me anymore. But he asked me, could I write the introduction? And you know what he did one day? I think he was in New York, and he came back by where I was preaching, and he brought me a baseball hat. Did you ever see those officers' covers where on the bill it's got all that gold braiding? He hands me this black baseball hat with all this gold braiding on the bill, and across the front of it, it said, Combat Infantry. That hat never went on this head. Because if I put that hat on my head, it'd be an insult to every guy who was really a combat infantry. You understand? Here's what I'm saying. If I ask you, don't put up your hand. But if I ask you to put up your hand, how many of your soldiers for Christ, and you put your hand up, there ought to be some things that you know. I'm not gonna give you a piece of paper and give you a test and grade it. You grade yourself. And if you're a soldier for Christ, this is the first thing you ought to know. You ought to know when you joined. If you're a soldier for Christ, when did you join? Let me ask a question. How many, you don't have to tell me what branch of service, how many of anybody people in here were in the military? Okay, where were you in, brother? Oh, you're in the Marine Corps. Okay. You know how he got in the Marine Corps? He always liked the Marines. He wasn't against the Marines. And he went to bed one night, and he woke up the next day in the Marine Corps uniform and figured, I must be in the Marines. Nobody here believes what I just said. I'll bet you he can tell you when he joined. I have never found anybody that ever got into the military that couldn't tell you the day, some of them the hour, when they joined. Guys, I can tell you when I tried to join, but I never got in. If you say you're a soldier for Christ, you ought to know when you got in. Because you see something? I never got in the U.S. military, but I can remember when I joined the Lord's army. Man, it was 1970. I was in Bible college. I'd just gotten saved. And there was an evangelist preaching that night. And you know how bad I wanted in? I got on my knees and I cried, "Let me in your army. I know that I'm in that army." Guys, if you say I am a soldier for Christ, you ought to be able to say, look, I didn't say, I don't have the date. I got the date when I got saved, okay? June 14th, 1970. I know when I got saved. I know about when I joined the military for the Lord, but I know I joined. And if you say you're a soldier for Christ, you'll be able to go back and say, yep, right there. That's the place where I said I want to be a soldier for God. And if you're a soldier for God, when did you join? My second thing is this. If you're a soldier for the Lord, who's your enemy? Now, you know, today, especially the 20, 30-somethings, if you ask them who's your enemy, they want to go like this. I don't want anybody. You know when that first Gulf War came around? They're showing this 19-year-old kid. They're about to ship him over to Iraq, you know, going to have that first Gulf War. This kid's sitting there, you know, he's got this Kevlar helmet on about three sizes too big. And they're interviewing him, and he's about whining like a puppy. He says this, he goes, "I didn't join the army to fight. I just wanted to get my college paid for." And I thought, and you will if you live through this. We got a generation, they don't even want to offend the devil. And it's not because they're afraid of him. They don't want on their resume they ever offended anybody. Now, I'm telling you something, guys. Do you understand there is a devil? Do you understand that he is God's sworn enemy? Do you understand that anything you... Look, if you can't figure out... I tell people sometimes, I don't know what to do for God. I said, think of something to make the devil mad. Do that. Just do something to make the devil mad. And God will probably say, that's pretty stupid, but it was good, wasn't it? And guys, who's your enemy? Now, here's what I found. I have found that Bible-believing Christians, they are quicker to shoot their own than they are the devil. If a Bible-believing Christian... If there's a preacher that they hated and they had a gun with one bullet and downtown they saw that preacher and there's the preacher and there's the devil and they only got one bullet, they could rid the universe of the devil with one pull of trigger. The devil would get a pass every time because we'll take out the preacher. Guys, who's your enemy? There ought to be somebody whose day you're trying to ruin. You know, someplace in... And I don't know, this guy said something about some preacher didn't like me. I know that's hard for you to believe. And I don't even care. I mean, I don't care. I mean, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. They care. They like me, don't like me, whatever. I don't even want to know why. But he goes, you know why? I said, why? Well, he didn't like King James Bible. He didn't like you because you like it. I said, whoa, that makes me very happy. You guys, I don't know about you, but there are some people, blood-bought Christians, who hate this book and hate the concept of a perfect Bible. And when they say my name, you know how I hope they say it? I hope they say it something like this. And I'm not like Sam Gibb. You say, you want something to be like that? The enemy. There's some people that believe we came from monkeys and amoebas and we crawled out of a swamp 4 billion years ago. I want those people to not like me. I want to ruin their day if I have a chance to. Do you understand? You say, well, I don't want to do that. Then you're going to ruin one of God's people's day. You're either going to fight God's people or you're going to fight the devil's people. And I'm serious, man. We will fight God's people to the death and never hurt the devil's crowd. And there's got to be somebody, guys. There's got to be somebody that you're trying to ruin their day. I hope. Let me ask you this. If you're in the Lord's army, who are you supporting? I don't know if you know this, but in armed military, and I don't know how this equates around the world. But in our military, out of every 10 people in the military, one of them is engaged in combat. The other nine are supporting the one. Now, don't sit there and go, see, that's the whole problem. Oh, wait a minute. You let them alone. They've been doing this a long time. They know how to do this better than you and I do. And I see this. This is where I look at this a little different than some of my preacher friends. We kind of portray it that everybody in here has to be a frontline soldier for God. And I don't believe that. I really don't. Get in, and if you're not going to be a frontline soldier, support a frontline soldier. You know, this concept of, well, everybody's got to be knocking on doors. Everybody's got to be out there, you know, being a soul winner and everything else. I said, well, and there are, you know, there are some people that are just not good at talking to people. Well, there's probably some folks in the military who aren't good at killing people, but they're good at packing parachutes, or they're good at fixing airplane engines, or they're good at repairing people that have been hurt. Could you imagine if our military, some guy says, man, my Hummer broke down. We got to get that to the motor pool and get it fixed. And we don't have a motor pool anymore. All the mechanics are in the front line. Oh, man, well, I guess I have to fix it myself. I guess I'll do that after lunch. Oh, there ain't going to be any lunch. All the cooks are in the front line. Well, you know, I got shot yesterday, and I think I need, well, we don't have any medics and corpsmen anymore. Everybody's in the front line. Guys, somebody's got to support the people in the front line. I'm going to tell you what I think, okay? And you're going to think I'm crazy, but let me explain. I really believe no church should buy gospel tracts. I don't think churches ought to buy gospel tracts. Why not? I think some real smart church member ought to come to the pastor and say, preacher, order the tracts, I'll pay for it. Say, what is that? Ooh, that's buying the bullets for the army. I like designated offering. You know what a designated offering is? That's when I give it to somebody and tell them how to spend it. I wish we had designated taxes. When I paid my, I paid my taxes. Actually, I paid taxes for a whole bunch of people. But when I paid my taxes, you know what I put in there? I'd say, use this for bombs and bullets. So you, that's what you'd want it used for? Yeah, I don't want it to be paying hospitalization for some illegal. I don't want it to pay for some BLM guy living under a bridge somewhere, burning half of Portland to the ground. No, I want it to go. I want it to go to my military, the people that are trying to keep me free. I want to support them with it. Right. And guys, really, you know what you want to do? Read these missionary letters. Read those missionary letters out there. Here's what some of you do. You're reading a missionary letter, and that missionary says something about pray. We need $250 for this or that. Now, I believe in prayer. I believe in prayer. But sometimes I think, quote, unquote, I'll pray for you, is the cheapest way out. And here's what will happen. You'll be reading one of the missionaries. No, now none of you ever read a missionary letter from now on. You'll be reading the missionary letter, and the guy needs $250. God will say, give him $250. I'll pray for him. No. You know, if you were smart, now think about this, guys. What if you bought a bunch of tracts for a missionary in the foreign language that he serves in? Every tract that went out that somebody got saved on, some of that would come back on your record in eternity. If you were smart, you'd buy this church's tracts, or you'd buy this church's Sunday school material. And anybody that benefited from those tracts or that Sunday school material, that'd go on your record. Guys, who are you supporting? I was at a church, and we were having dinner, you know, after the Sunday morning service. We're in a restaurant, and I'm sitting on the end of the table. Right around the corner is this white-haired old guy. You see him now, baseball hat, Vietnam veteran. I said, you're a Vietnam veteran, and you could just see the pride. And I don't mean bad pride, okay? He went, yes, sir. I said, what branch of military are you in? He said, Air Force. I said, really? I said, what'd you do? And when I said that, he just almost went pale, and he hung his head. He said, I was a clerk. I said, I don't care what you were, bud. I said, you have done more militarily for this country than I ever have. Let me ask you a question. You guys that were in the military, Do they pay people in the military? Don't they pay them? Oh, you pray for them clerks. You need a clerk. You may need that clerk when you never need that medic. You may never need the guy at the motor pool, but you need that clerk. And I'm serious, guys. If you're not going to go to a foreign country, man, there's, of all countries, I'm going to tell you this, of all countries, the one country I never want to set foot on is India. I have no idea. I just don't like India. I don't like them people. Boy, they have made shaking Americans down and a work of art. They know how to do it. And my wife and I support 20 missionaries. Now, we support missionaries through our church, but her and I personally support 20 missionaries. One of those missionaries is to India. You say, I thought you don't like them. I don't like them, but I did say I want them to go to hell. I just don't want to have to go there. Some years ago, this Indian preacher wrote to me, and he asked me permission to translate the understandable history into Hindi. And I don't know how many requests I've had over the years, Japanese, Chinese, a bunch of them. It's been translated a bunch of languages. And I have some protocols on how we do this. And he said, and he kind of inferred, and maybe I'll have you come over and preach. Well, he thinks that's a plum. I see it as an axe hanging over my head. And here's what I figured. He probably just said that about coming, because everybody wants to preach internationally. I don't care about preaching internationally. I do preach internationally. I said I don't care. I don't claim that the world is my parish. The United States of America is my country. Now, I do go out of the country, usually when I'm asked to, by somebody in the country. But when I go out of the country, I ask God for a good meeting. You know why? Because I tell God, when I'm not in my country, every day I'm preaching in another country, it's a day out of my field. So let this not be wasted. But he figured, you know, this guy will be, he'll want to come and preach in India. So he'll say yes. So I told him my protocols, and I never addressed, because he didn't ask me. See, because if he asked me to come and preach, I got to go preach. But he never asked. He just kind of inferred. So I never mentioned anything about preaching, and I told him the protocols for translating the book into Hindi, and I never heard from him. Thank God and John Calvin, brother, I am telling you. I mean, it was just not predestinated for me to go to India. But I supported a missionary. Say, why? Because I want as many Indians in heaven. But if I'm a witness to an Indian, it'd be the guy across the counter when I rent the motel room, okay? But guys, imagine if you bought the tracts that went to a country. Imagine if you bought the tracts for the church. What I'm saying, let me ask you a question. You just look at some of these missionaries and they go through grief. Let me tell you what the greatest thing a missionary loves to see. A letter from home. Now, I know what you just said. Okay, I'll email somebody. Yeah, email's nice. But I said a letter written on paper. Put an envelope with a stamp up in the corner. When they get a letter from this country, from somebody in a church, you have no idea what encouragement is. Let me tell you what happened. I have a pastor friend. He was raised Roman Catholic. I was raised Roman Catholic. I began to witness my dad and mom when I got saved. I witnessed my dad and mom for 12 years. And after 12 years of witnessing, my dad got saved. My mom got saved. This fella got saved. Same thing. He began to witness to his dad and mom. Witnessed him for 12 years. And after 12 years, his Roman Catholic dad died with him. Man, that's a kick in the stomach. I called him up. I said, brother, how you doing? He said, I'm backslid as hell. You say, I don't think a preacher ought to talk that way. Me neither. So I called all of our friends. We broke fellowship with him. We got him out of ministry. Because I love Jesus. But isn't that how we do it? You say, I don't like your preacher talk like that. Neither do I. But maybe when your dad goes to hell, you will. All I had was $40 in my wallet. Only two 20s. I'd like to add more. But I took those two 20s and I wrote him a letter. And I said, brother, here's what I want you to do with this money. I said, I want you to take your wife out. Just two of you have a nice evening at a restaurant. Nice meal. And $40 get that time. $40 would have got you a decent deal. And I didn't see him, oh, maybe 3 or 4 years before I rotated to that side of the country. And he said, brother, he said, that $40 kept me in the ministry. Let me ask you a question. Would you be willing to pay $40 to keep a preacher in the ministry? I am not impressed with people who get guys out of the ministry. Let me tell you a spiritual lesson that I learned around 1968, 69. I was lost, but I learned this spiritual lesson. I'm watching the news, and these hippies are burning Bank of America buildings in California. And they interviewed this hippie that burned a building. Now, guys, do you understand that when you set fire to a building and you get interviewed instead of arrested, something's already wrong? And they interviewed this hippie, and they said, why are you burning these Bank of America buildings? And he said, we're going to build a new country, but we got to burn the old one down first. And I learned a spiritual lesson that day. You know what it is? Any hippie can burn a building. Can I ask you a question? You ever seen a building that a hippie built? I haven't. Unless it's those ones at the fun house at the carnival, you know, like that. I mean, if I did see a building, I think hippies built one that just collapsed in Florida here a couple of days ago, okay? And what I'm saying is this. Couldn't we take a kid that's 6 years old, give him a pack of matches, and turn him loose in this building, and by this time tomorrow, it'd be a burned-out hulk? But that same six-year-old couldn't build this building. A six-year-old can take a gun and kill somebody. But a six-year-old can't take somebody who's been shot and save their life. And I learned that spiritual lesson in 1968, 69. You know what it is? Any hippie can burn a building. Anybody can destroy. And the Bible calls the devil the destroyer. So I'm going to stand in front of Jesus Christ one of these days. So are you. You think he might say this? Did you love me? And if he asked me if I loved him, and I say, yes, well, how do I know? You think I want to respond this way? How could you question if I love you? You see that church right there? I split that church. I got that preacher out of the ministry, and I got those preachers where they never talk to each other anymore. I mean, how could you question my love for you? Look at all the smoldering ruins behind me. Look at all the blood on my hands. You know what I learned? I'd rather keep one in. I have had a ministry for 51 years. You know what? 3 of the biggest trophies I got. Now, they don't have to mean nothing to you. But 3 of the greatest victories I've ever had are 3 churches that were about to close that I kept open. Man, if I could do backflips, I'd do one right now. You say, why? Because I'd sooner keep a church open than close one down. And yet we think if we split one, we think if we get somebody out of the ministry, we've helped God. How can you help God when you're shooting a soldier? When that first Gulf War started, there was a bunch of guys in the Army. They were meeting in a room, and an Army sergeant walked up to that room, opened the door, pulled a pin on a hand grenade, threw it in there, killed 2 of them, injured 11 of them. You know why? Because he was a Muslim Army sergeant. When I heard that, I thought, I'm surprised he wasn't a Baptist. That sounds like our tactic. Guys, who are you supporting? Read those missionary letters, guys. If you got some favorite preacher, I'm not talking about me. I mean, if you got some favorite preacher, oh, your own pastor. Every now and then, you know what you ought to do? Just give him some money and say, go take your wife out. What else did you want me to tell him? And a nice vacation in Tahiti. Well, okay, anyway, moving right along. But really, really, wouldn't it be nice to get to heaven? I mean, you won't find out till you get to heaven. Wouldn't it be nice to get to heaven and find out somebody stayed in ministry because of something you did? I would much rather find out somebody stayed in the ministry because of something I did than somebody got out of it because of something I did. And let's face it, guys. I would much rather buy the bullets for our military than go to Afghanistan and shoot them myself. So we just send them to them. And I'd much rather send the tracks to India and the missionary to India than have to go there myself. And if there's some country you don't like, send that missionary some money. Well, they'll pray for them. Praying's too cheap. Put your prayer request on the back of a check for about $250. And do something to support them. Wouldn't it be nice they get up to heaven and you find out you actually kept somebody going? And so if you're in the army, who are you supporting? If you're in the Lord's army, what's your theater of operation? See what do you mean? I mean, where are you fighting? When I refer back to World War II, that's an easy one. Because in World War II, there was two wars going on. We were fighting a war in Europe and a war in the Pacific. There were guys that fought in Europe, never got to the Pacific. There were guys that fought in the Pacific, never got to Europe. Well, my dad got drafted into World War II when he was 33 years old. That's a pretty old guy. You know when he got drafted? You know what his draft paper said? You are in for 1 year or the duration of the war. Now, what that meant was, if my dad, they swore him in today, and tomorrow the war ended, they'll keep him for a year and turn him loose. But if that war went till the end, I don't know if you know this, you know, people talk about Truman dropping that bomb, and he shouldn't have done it. At the time they dropped that bomb, they were ready for this war. They thought it was going until 1950. That war shortened it. That bomb shortened it by 5 years. It saved a lot of lives. My dad was drafted in 1941, and you know when he got out? He got out when the Japanese surrendered. He was in the 5th Air Force. That was the Pacific. And so my dad never was in Europe. His brother was in Sherman's 3rd Army. Didn't know it till he died. He got 4 bronze stars in a Sherman tank. But he was never in the Pacific. You say, okay, so what is my theater of operation? Answer this question. Where do you live? You know that you are the greatest witness God has in this area. There may be a greater soul winner than you. There may be somebody who is better at it than you, but they live in Kansas. And they're blessing Kansas. But they're not doing a thing for here. You know, when I went down to Bible college after I got saved, I had a little problem. And my problem was this. And I talked to God about it. I said, Lord, I said, I got friends and family up in Ohio. And I said, I had a lot of drinking buddies. I want to see them get saved. And I said, I want to see my drinking buddies, my family get saved. But they're in Ohio and I'm in Florida. And I can't witness to them. And the Lord made a simple statement to me. And I got that thing down. And he said, are your friends in Ohio? Yep. And you're in Florida? Yep. He said, am I in Florida? Yep. Am I in Ohio? Yeah. He said, there might be somebody in Ohio got friends and family in Florida. And they're grieving that they can't reach you. So why don't you go win everybody you can in Florida? Maybe you'll win somebody's family from Ohio. And I'll send somebody to your friends and family in Ohio while you're down here in Florida. And a bunch of my friends got saved. And I didn't lead them to Christ. But somebody got to them. And some of them I got saved. I led them to Christ, okay? But what I'm saying, guys, what's your theater of operation? Where are you serving God? I'm going to tell you what my theater is, what I do. I preach the gospel, and I try to get people to use the King James Bible. And that's my ministry, okay? If I could have another one, you know what I've always been enamored with, never tried it? Those anti-evolution ministries. I always think those are so cool. I do. I think those guys, they have that science and they show that stuff. And I've studied enough of it to where I know that there's nothing about the fossil record that supports evolution. But that's not my job. Guys, I read stuff written by Brits. Now, I like Brits, the British. They are boring. A Brit can put you to sleep reporting on a house fire. I say, it's on fire. Give that microphone to an American. Oh, the flames are leaping in the air. Women are fainting. Babies are crying. I mean, we'll make a movie out of it. A Brit. Do you know what's more boring than a Brit? A century-old Brit. Writing about Greek manuscripts. That is like experiencing a century-old migraine headache. And I can know on three separate occasions I happened to read 1,000 pages of something written in 1871. And the only positive thing I can think is I'm glad they're already dead because I'd hunt them down. That's what I do. There's some guys don't do that. They study out bones. They've got something that they're doing for God. What are you doing for God? Find something. But I'm telling you, you are here. You shouldn't have to look far around. You say, where am I supposed to be serving God? Do this. You just saw it. Amen. You just nailed down your mission field. Amen. So what's your theater of operation? What is your military objective? I don't run our military. I try to give credit to the guys that do. I'd like to think they know more about it than I would. But I'm not sure this tour of duty thing is a cool thing. You know, you put them in there and say you're here for a year because all they think about is 2 more weeks, 3 more days, 4 more days, I'm out of here. And again, you know what they did in World War II? They put them in there and said, you kill them until you go. You don't go home until they're dead. Ooh, that's a motivator. That was a great motivator. And those troops, can you explain to me how we whipped 2 real armies, the Japanese and the Germans, and we did it in 4 years? And we've been fighting a bunch of camel jockeys for 25 and can't whip them. Now, there's something wrong. And I don't think it's the quality of our military. I think it's the leadership and how they think. But what are you trying to win? You know, I've talked to guys in Vietnam, what they'd say. In World War II, they'd go take a hill. It was their hill. In Vietnam, they'd take a hill, and then they'd walk back down off of it, and the Viet Cong take it again. Next day, they'd go up and take it again. That doesn't make sense to me. Let me tell you why we lost Vietnam. One very simple reason. We never invaded the North. If you can shoot at my house and I can't shoot back, I'm going to lose. And if the North could invade the South, but we can't go to the North, there's no way we could win. Guys, you're going to die. Or you're going to leave here with the Lord when he comes back, right? So when your life is summed up, what's your objective? I mean, you really want to say, I had more antlers in my family room walls than anybody else. I caught the biggest fish. Guys, I told you I'm not a fisherman. I knew a guy with one arm could fish. He's a fisherman. That guy could bait a hook with one hand, catch a fish, take it off. I was there one day. He caught a fish that big. I'm not proud of myself, but I get you guys every time on that. Anyway, yeah. I'm going to tell you what my 2 military objectives are. I want to get every man, woman, and child on this planet worshiping the God of the Bible. I didn't say the saved ones. I think the world would be a better place if the lost ones did. And God would get glory from that. So I want to get every man, woman, and child serving the God and glorifying the God of this book. And I want them using the King James Bible. And that's a lot. And I don't have a third one. So like think about it, will you? Will you try to think about it? Sit down in a room all by yourself and say, I'm going to die. And if I die tomorrow, what have I done? What have I left behind? What have I achieved? What have I made? Have I made a difference somewhere? What am I aiming at? And honest, if it's a golf trophy, do you understand how misguided you are? If it's a deer, if it's a fish, if it's the cubic foot of your, or the square foot of your house. I mean, if that's what you're aiming at, it's not going to mean a thing. What if you said, I'm going to support 5 missionaries from 1 country? Or I'm going to support 5 missionaries from any 5 countries. Just find something. What are you shooting for? Let me ask you this. I got 2 more. What does your service cost? Military service costs everybody something. If it's nothing more than 4 years out of their life, it costs them something. You know, we say this, if a guy has to get called up like a National Guardsman, he goes military, he comes back, they got to give his job back. Guys, back in 1969 and 70, I went to a college to become a computer programmer. I actually graduated from a computer programmer. Never used it. But I know this, if you are in the computer industry, IT, and you're out for 6 months, you're out. I mean, that thing is moving so fast, in 6 months, they'll leave you behind. The languages that the computer languages I used, computers don't even know what they are. I mean, when I worked with a computer, it went from here to this wall. And it had a crank on the side. And when you printed something, it sounded like a machine. Man, there are men who go out to the military and they lose their jobs, or they lose their wife, or they lose an arm. I read a book called As Tough As They Come. This guy was a sergeant in the Rangers in Afghanistan, and he is one of five living quadruple amputees. Stepped on a EID, both legs, both arms. You think it hadn't cost him something? And there's some guys that came back home, and they don't even know that they're back home. And then you want to say, oh, I'm in the Lord's army. What's it cost? Man, I got to tell you something, guys. I had one dream when I was lost. You know what it was? I wanted my own body shop. Man, I like cars. I still like cars. Not painted cars. I was getting into custom paints. I wanted to have my own, I want to have a custom paint shop. When I got saved, I was working in the shop, just me and the boss, me and the guy that owned the place. And I went away to Bible college my first year. Came back and worked with him between my first and second year that summer. And as I was getting ready to go back to Bible college, his name was Rod. I said, Rod, I'm going back to Bible college. I'll come back next summer and work for you again. He said, no, you won't. I said, why not? He said, I'm selling the whole place, moving to Texas. I said, really? Who are you selling to? No, the place, the place. The place was the garage. About $15,000 worth of mechanics tools and body shop. The name, a piece of property, and a three-bedroom house. The place. He said, I'm selling the whole place. And he said, I'm moving to Texas. I said, who are you selling to? He said, I'm selling to you for $7,000. You say, that was the deal. No, you don't understand. That wasn't a great deal. That was all I ever wanted in my life. It was right there. And it took me about literally five seconds. And I said, no, not me, Rod. God's called me to preach. 35 years ago when I left my church, I sold all my body shop tools. Man, it still hurts me. Really, it does. Still hurts me. I think about it. I had grinders. I had a paint gun. Man, it was good for doing, had big orifices. It was great for metal flakes and things. But I don't regret it. What I'm telling you is I have never found a man in the ministry that if he hadn't been able to say no to God, and God didn't judge him, if he had just kept his day job, he wouldn't be in better financial condition with a whole lot less problems. Because everybody said yes, it cost him something. What's yours cost you? Last one. I told you I've not been in the military. But I know this. There's two kinds of soldiers. And there's no reflection on either one of them. There's a guy that gets in, joins up, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever, and then gets out. That's not an act of cowardice. He signed up for 5 years, served 5 years, got out. Some of them guys, you know some of those guys that were that got that thing my dad got? You're in for 1 year of the duration, and in that 1 year, they won the Medal of Honor. They did something tremendously heroic. And so some guys, they join up and they serve out their term, and then they leave. And then there's some guys join, and they say, who'd want to leave this? And they stay in. And stay in. Those posters out there. The fellow that did those is now with the Lord. He was in the 82nd Airborne. He's got two sons. Both of them were in Special Forces, Green Berets. One of them is out of the military. The other one is no longer Special Forces. He's now in Special Operations. He lives in Fort Bragg, and his wife wakes up and finds out that he's disappeared in the night, and he comes back home 3 months later with a wound he can't even tell her about and a medal he can't show to anybody. That's a lifer. I was talking to a guy one time, and he was about 18, 19 years old, and he was going to Ranger school. And the guy that was training him was 40 years old. Now, 40 years old, the Greek word for 40 is ancient. Okay? And this guy, we would joke about this 40-year-old guy going to teach us something. And he said, one day he comes in, he says, okay, girls. He said, get your packs on. We're going to go on a 15-mile hike. And this guy put his pack on and ran the entire 15 miles backwards facing this company, counting cadence. And he said, man, at about 5 miles, guys are dropping out. Come on, ladies, you can do it. You can do it. They never made fun of that guy again. I said, what is he, lifer? And then lifers, you know what they can't figure out? Why would anybody want to get out? And them guys are going for one tour, think, why would anybody want to stay in? I'm not saying anything bad about either one of them because they both can do something for God while they're there. Now, I have a taste. You know, I've been told this. The average useful life of a Christian is about 5 years. Now, I don't mean that they serve God 5 years. I mean over 20 years, they might serve God for a year and then not do anything and then maybe serve him for 2 years and not do anything and then maybe 17 to 8 years later or 10 years later, serve him for another 2 years. I mean, over their life in church, they might serve God about 5 years. And I had a guy say, I don't understand that. I said, I understand it completely. That's about one tour. That's one enlistment. They signed on. They did their thing. They got out. I got to tell you something, guys. And I know this is true about your pastor. I'm a lifer. I can't equate to people that serve God and then quit. You know, I'm 71 years old. I got all these people saying, when are you going to retire? I told my wife, I said, we will slow down. But I said, we'll do it when we feel like we have to, not because some date on a calendar. I said, what am I supposed to do? Go sit in a boat? Wow, this sure beats preaching. When I see guys in boats fishing, all I think about is, I could be writing a book. So here's my question. You say, well, honest preacher, I remember when I got in. Okay. My last question. Still in? Or did you climb the fence one Saturday night and never been back? You walked out of church because somebody made you mad. I can't get over men. Men. Somebody offended me or shop, I'll tear your skirt off. Guys? Still active? You know what I want to do? You know, they say, what was his name? Uncle Bud Robinson, an old Nazarene preacher. And he said this. He said, I want to fight the devil as long as I got strength. And he says, as long as I can stand. He said, what I can't stand anymore, he said, I'm going to bite him. He said, until I got no teeth, and then I'm going to gum him to death. I like it. I like you. So I'm asking you, you say you're a soldier. When did you join? Who's your enemy? Who are you supporting? What's your theater of operation? What's your military objective? What does your service cost you? Are you still active? I'll tell you this, I'll be done. There was a guy in my high school. His name was Bobby. Bobby was a big guy, just one of them 18-year-old kids. He was about 6'3", 6'4", red hair, just a bull of a guy. Bobby was a fighter. There were two brothers that used to terrorize all the street fighters in Maslin, and Bobby whipped them both at the same time. He's just a bad dude. And we were at a football game one night, high school football game. They got to stand something about, I'm from Maslin, Ohio. Maslin, Ohio is where pro football got its start. The very first pro football team in history was my hometown, Maslin Tigers. And they were undefeated for like 6 or 7 years until somebody started the second pro football team. But anyway, my town has 33,000 people in it. Our high school stadium seats 24,000 people. And this is right around 1968, Vietnam War is at its height. We haven't graduated yet. Bobby's not out of the military. He's not out of school yet. But right about that time, the Green Berets were on everybody's radar. And there's a fella, he had made a song called The Ballad of the Green Berets. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. Now, this is going to date me, but Bobby went down to Woolworths. And for $1.50, bought a Green Beret. And I got to tell you something. He looked pretty good. So we're at this high school football game. It's about halftime. We're all down. We're going under the bleachers, you know, going to get some food. And here's how Bobby walked through a crowd. And everybody just moved on. And Bobby's walking down through this crowd, and he's got this Green Beret on. He looks good. And he's just walking through like this. And he didn't see him. Bobby didn't see him. But I saw him. Over here is a black guy. He's not Bobby's size. He's about 3 or 4 inches shorter than Bobby. He's probably 60, 70 pounds lighter than Bobby. This guy's buying some food for his friends, whatever. He had him turn around. He saw Bobby come through that crowd. He left his food, his change, his money, everything. And he started. Bobby didn't see him coming. But he's coming through the crowd like this. And he is just putting people out of his way. And he stepped right across Bobby's path like this. And Bobby, it startled Bobby, and he stopped like this. And Bobby looked down at that guy, and I watched the red. I mean, his face turned the color of his hair. And he had, on the end of his arms, he had these 2 10-pound hams. And when he balled those two fists up, and I thought, oh, pal, you are going to wish you never stepped in front of Bobby. Before Bobby could do anything, this black guy looked at him and said this. You earned that? And I watched that color drain back out of Bobby's face. And I saw those fists kind of relax. He went, no. Take it off. I earned mine. Saw that thing come off. He put his back pocket in there somewhere again. He went to Vietnam. He joined the 82nd Airborne. He proved himself. But somebody that had earned something didn't appreciate somebody wearing something they hadn't earned. I'm not going to deny. I'm not going to question if you say you're saved. And I'm not going to question if you say you love the Lord. I'm not going to try to tell you you're wrong. But if you say you're a soldier, I'm going to tell you, I know I'm a soldier. I know I'm in. And I'm not out. I've not gotten out. I have no intention of getting out. I'm asking you, what are you doing with these questions? Because you got the answer for these if you're really a soldier. I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. With your heads bowed and your eyes closed. You a soldier for Christ? Well, when did you join? If you can't remember when you joined, it's probably because you didn't. There's no shame in that. Just don't claim you did something you didn't do. Don't claim you joined. Who's your enemy? Man, I don't want to brag about how many preachers I shot out of the saddle. I don't want to brag about how many churches I split. I'd rather keep them open. I'd rather keep the preachers going. I'd rather keep the missionaries on the field. If you're a soldier for the Lord, who are you supporting? What's your theater of operation? When your life is over, what do you want to be? The sum total value of it. What's your military objective? If you're a soldier, what does your service cost? And if you're a soldier, and you say, I can remember when I joined, are you still in? Maybe it's time for somebody to say, Lord, not me, not preacher, Lord, I haven't been in battle for a while. I've been laying out. I've been enjoying life. But I want to be a soldier. Maybe somebody tonight would say, I'm not in, but I want in. You can get in tonight. The recruiting office is open. The recruiting officer, he's very, very gracious in receiving recruits. Maybe you need to talk to God tonight. Father, thank you for your goodness and your grace. God, I know I'm a miserable, sorry example of a Christian. I know I'm a walking, talking piece of dirt. I know there's more dishonor in me than honor. I know I'm no superstar, even a star in your service. But I know I'm in it. And I thank you for letting me be in it. And I thank you, God, for a lifetime and some of the men who have served beside. Some of them are home with you now. They spent their lives out in the front line for you. And it cost them their lives. It cost them their family. It cost them their health. But they were soldiers. And I mean nothing bad against these people, God, but if somebody ever asks them if they're a soldier for you, let them think twice before they raise their hand. Don't let them go down to Woolworths and buy a green beret. Let them join and earn one. Maybe tonight, God, somebody wants to join. That you would allow us to serve you absolutely flourishing. Maybe somebody would find something to do with their energy, with their health, with their wealth. Something that would leave glory to you behind. Maybe they'd join tonight. Maybe there's somebody they remember when they join. They've been AWOL. They've been out of action. And you're very gracious and merciful about them coming back. Maybe they'll come back tonight. They'll get back in the fight. They'll be so glad, God. They'll be so glad when this thing is over that they had their weapon in their hand and your goal in their sights till their last breath. I pray, God, that you are blessed by what your people do.